There was a sudden, sharp sound as the leather strand of her bracelet snapped of its own volition. Black beads flew upward with so much force that they rattled off the ceiling and went bouncing around the apartment for a good 10 seconds. Mister, still batting playfully at his gift sack of catnip, paused to watch them, ears flicking, eyes alertly tracking their movement. I went up to the girl, who was staring at them, mystified. "It was the vampire, wasn't it?" I said, "seeing him die." She blinked at me, then at the scattered beads.
I didn't just see it, Harry. I felt it. I can't explain it any better than that. Inside my head, I felt it the same way I felt that poor girl. But this was horrible.
"Yeah," I said. "You're a sensitive. It's a tremendous talent, but it has some drawbacks to it. In this case, though, I'm glad you have it."
"Why?"
she whispered. I gestured at the scattered beads. "Congratulations, kid," I told her quietly. "You're ready." She blinked at me, her head tilted.
"What?"
I took the now empty leather strand and held it up between two fingers. It wasn't about power, Molly. It was never about power. You've got plenty of that. She shook her head.
"But all those times."
The beads weren't ever going to go up. Like I said, power had nothing to do with it. You didn't need that. You needed brains. I thumped a forefinger over one of her eyebrows. You needed to open your eyes. You needed to be truly aware of how dangerous things are. You needed to understand your limitations. And you needed to know why you should set out on something like this.
"But all I said was that I was scared."
"After what you got to experience? That's smart, kid," I said. "I'm scared too. Every time something like this happens, it scares me. But being strong doesn't get you through. Being smart does. I've beaten people and things who were stronger than I was because they didn't use their heads, or because I used what I had better than they did. It isn't about muscle, kiddo, magical or otherwise. It's about your attitude, about your mind." She nodded slowly and said,
"About doing things for the right reasons."
"You don't throw down like this just because you're strong enough to do it," I said. "You do it because you don't have much choice. You do it because it's unacceptable to walk away and still live with yourself later." She stared at me for a second, and then her eyes widened.
"Otherwise, you're using power for the sake of using power."
I nodded. "And power tends to corrupt. It isn't hard to love using it, Molly. You've got to do it with the right attitude, or
the power starts using you," she said.
She'd heard the argument before, but this was the first time she said the words slowly, thoughtfully, as if she'd actually understood them, instead of just parroting them back to me. Then she looked up.
"That's why you do it, why you help people. You're using the power for someone other than yourself."
"That's part of it," I said.
"Yeah. I feel sort of stupid."
"There's a difference in knowing something," I poked her head again, "and knowing it." I touched the middle of her sternum. "See?" She nodded slowly. Then she took the strand back from me and put it back on her wrist. There was just enough left to let her tie it again. She held it up so that I could see and said, "So that I'll remember." I grinned at her and hugged her. She hugged back.
"Did you get a lesson like this?"
"Pretty much," I said, "from this grumpy old Scot on a farm in the Ozarks."
"When do I stop feeling like an idiot?"
"I'll let you know when I do," I said, and she laughed. We parted the hug and I met her eyes. "You still in?"
"Yes," she said simply.
"Then you'll ride up with Ramirez and me. We'll stop outside the compound and you'll stay with the car." She nodded seriously.
"What do I do?"
"Keep your eyes and ears open. Stay alert for anything you might sense. Don't talk to anyone. If anyone approaches you, leave. If you see a bunch of bad guys showing up, start honking the horn and get out."
"Okay," she said. She looked a little pale.
I pulled a silver cylinder out of my pocket.
This is a hypersonic whistle. Mouse can hear it from a mile away. If we get in trouble, I'll blow it and he'll start barking about it. He'll face where we are. Try to get the car as close as you can. I'll have Mouse with me, she said, and looked considerably relieved. I nodded. Almost always better not to work alone. What if I do something wrong? I shrugged. What if you do? That's always possible, Molly. But the only way never to do the wrong thing is never to do anything, she finished. Bingo! I put a hand on her shoulder. Look, you're smart enough. I've taught you everything I know about the White Court. Keep your eyes open. Use your head, your judgment. If things get bad and I haven't started blowing the whistle, run like hell. If it gets past 10 p.m. and you haven't heard from me, do the same. Get home and tell your folks. All right, she said quietly. She took a deep breath and let it out unsteadily. This is scary. And we're doing it anyway, I said. That makes us brave, right? If we get away with it, I said. If we don't, it just makes us stupid. Her eyes widened for a second, and then she let out a full-throated laugh. Ready? I asked her. Ready, sir. Good. Outside, gravel crunched as Ramirez returned with the beetle. All right, apprentice, I said. Get Mouse's lead on him, will you? Let's do it.